Welcome to the Shields Outdoors Podcast, your source for information on hunting, fishing, and all of your outdoor passions.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Shields Outdoors Podcast. Mike Anderson here, along with my co-hosts Solomon Bach and Ashley Sorensen. How are you guys doing today?
Doing awesome.
Yeah, doing great. How are you, Mike?
Hey, we're podcasting, so it's a good day.
It's always a good day.
And we've got a very interesting guest with us today. We have Eric Clark of the OKest Hunter. And I love that name. You know, I like what they stand for because it's a little bit refreshing, bit different. You know, in the days of social media, everything is like, here, let me show you the biggest fish I caught, the biggest buck I shot, and you know, you kind of get lost in, you know, Insta fame and things like that. And you know, it's okay to just get out there and enjoy nature and enjoy the outdoors. Yeah. And you know, that's kind of what Eric's about. So Eric, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. Or should I say okay? You know,
yeah,
it's usually the answer there.
Usually gets a chuckle,
right?
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
I'm doing okay.
Yeah, so how about you just give us a little introduction and in how this OKest platform came to be?
I think it was a long time coming to some degree. It technically started in probably 2017, 2018 when I bought the domain name OKestHunter.com. I was stewing on, I wouldn't say it was a victim of, you know, deer shaming, but essentially kind of. It just feels a little too strong to say it that way. But it occurred to me that I was like, wow, why are people shaming me for shooting a, it was my first archery deer ever. And I just happened to be a grown man with, I was already married, had a house and my first kid. And I got a doe fawn from the ground on public land. And I didn't even realize it was a doe fawn until I walked up and I was like, oh, that'll be an easy drag. good enough, you know, like it was my first one. And so I guess I technically identify as like an adult onset hunter, or be classified as such, considering I didn't really get into bow hunting until my mid-20s. Took me a long time to finally seal the deal. When I did, I posted that to the internet and people were like, wow, my dog's bigger than that. Why would you shoot that thing? What's wrong with you? It's a doe. Why would you even post a picture? Da-da-da-da-da. It was a pretty cherished memory. Like, my dad was there, and I felt like a 12-year-old boy when he came up, and I was like, I did it, Dad. I'm like, what's wrong with me? I feel like I'm 12. Yeah. And so it was at that moment, I was like, gosh. And I started to then see it elsewhere and notice it elsewhere, and I think I'd come across, like, someone had shamed a kid. And I was like, this is ridiculous. You know, what is happening here? So I was looking for other names, like Humble Hunter, but there's a gal that's an influencer that goes by Humble Huntress and what have you, and there's already a bunch of shirts out there that had been out there for a while that say World's OKest Hunter. There's also World's OKest Mom, Dad, everything. But I was like, well, if I take the Worlds off, is that something I could trademark? And is that something we could own? And I want to be like, I'm the OKest Hunter, not the Worlds. It's just the OKest one, like whatever. So before the OKest Hunter, the podcast used to go under a name called Where to Hunt, which is a different thing altogether. And one of the listeners of that show had reached out to, you know, meet me or get coffee. He lived in the same town. He's like, hey, I'm right where you are. I'd love to get coffee sometime. Met with him. He's a pretty savvy digital marketer, smart dude. I was like, hey, I have this other idea I'm sitting on called OKest Hunter. I explained it to him. I'm like, you know, this is for like the underdogs. These are the people that, you know, play Plinko with their tree stand sticks when they drop something down, you know, from the stand and make all the mistakes, forget the release, all these things. And no one's celebrating that as like a teachable moment. Or you look around the hunting space and every brand logo that happens to be in the category has like big, beautiful drop tine antlers or, you know, really robust racks. And I'm like, I believe in doing things different, not better. We're not going to do certain podcasts better than like a Joe Rogan, or we're not going to BS better than the working class guys or what have you. And so we can do it different. And no one's got a little tiny fork horn for a logo. Let's use that as a way to stand out here, stop people in the scroll, and celebrate things. And if you start to pull the layers back a little bit, you kind of you know, we'll say things like never pass rather than like, you should have let that thing go another year. We say, well, never pass, never pass on doing what makes you happy. Never pass on making memories to feel with ones that you love. And, so that's kind of where it started. And we just started posting memes and GIFs to the old Instagram page, and it struck a chord, and it was funny and it was relatable. And, so we've kind of really stuck with that MO of doing funny, relatable stuff, but we've really rooted ourselves in a much more deeper meaning. I don't think we'll ever fully solve the challenge of hunter shaming. I think that's a human nature thing that'll go on forever, but we can be a voice of positivity to make that positivity louder. So that's kind of the essence there.
Yeah, there's, you can always use a little bit more positivity in the world. And yeah, I just, I really love the little niche you guys have found. And I just really find myself gravitating to it because, I mean, my main job is running the social media platforms for Shields Outdoors. And one thing we really love to do is post like customer photos, customer submissions, stories, and things like that. And there's always those people that are out there like, oh, hold the fish closer to the camera, or like, that was a high fence hunt and stuff like that. And it's just, come on. I mean, this is a place to just celebrate the outdoors, not not be that way. And it's just, and then I, you know, stumbled across your channel, and it's just kind of a play on that. And I just found it really refreshing.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, one thing that happened early on that we didn't try to do, we didn't anticipate, and it was probably one of the better moments of doing this, because it's been around for officially 3 years. We codified the brand in June of 2020, right in the midst of COVID. And people started sending us DMs of their does, of their spikes, of their basket racks. And what I noticed is that when I went to like look at their profiles, those deer didn't, they never posted them ever before. And they still weren't posted. They were just sending them to us to say like, hey, this is the last deer, last time I ever did with my grandpa. And, you know, this deer means a lot to me. I never posted because I didn't want to get ridiculed. But, you know, thanks for doing this. It's really, really special what you guys are doing. This message means a lot. And you're right. You know, there's more to a hunt than the inches. And here's an example. And then like, they just started pouring in. It was like, wow, we really struck a chord here. Like I didn't wake up today expecting to like get emotional. I have a tear dripping down my eye. Like, holy crap. And now fast forward 3 more years, and those photos now do live online. Like, people are sharing them and they're tagging us saying never pass, no buck shame, you know, okay as hunter, shooter buck. We've taken some terms like shooter buck when people on camera on any hunting show is like, oh, it's a shooter, you know. That's usually because it's big, but we believe that a shooter buck is in the eye of the beholder, and everyone's at a different stage in their hunting journey, whether you're 40 years old hunting for the first time, or 12, or in the first hunt out of state, or the last hunt with your grandpa, the first hunt with your kid. Like, you just don't know someone's circumstance. Different states have different tag regulations, different populations of deer. Wisconsin's got a huge CWD problem. Like, so the internet has opened up this can of worms where everyone thinks that it's their neighbor, but they could live on the other side of the country with a totally different set of circumstances. So like, this judgment stuff, it gets annoying. Like you said, it's like, come on, can we just be nice to one another? We are of the same team, you know. The battle's out there. We don't need to be the neck biting the head off. So we just want to continue to build that strength amongst ourselves, and use our brand as glue if we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got a story that just like fits the bill for the OKS hunter. It's one of my most memorable hunts, and it's a hunt that no one's going to see a picture of the deer on Instagram because it's not big at all.
I think you should post it.
Maybe I will have to now. It's been a few years now, so I'd have to dig into the archives, and I've lost a couple of phones since then, so I don't know if I even have pictures. But it was a public land hunt. It was the, like, in North Dakota, we get like the first full week of January to hunt too, and then it was the Saturday before it closes, so it was like the January 5th, 6th, 7th, whatever, and it was cold, and I went out to this refuge, this public land piece, and I was looking at it and I was like, okay, I'm sure it's got hit hard by pheasants, all this stuff, so I have to like go as deep as possible. So like I found this chunk of woods, and it's pretty open, but there was this big chunk of woods, so I was like, there's got to be deer in that chunk, and it's like 2 miles in, so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get there and hopefully I find a good place to sit or something like that. And I get to the spot and there's this fence and there's an open fence roll. So like where like the DNR or whoever controls the place was, would like drive through and stuff like that. And I saw a bunch of deer tracks. So I'm like, oh, this is where I gotta be. All right, here we go. And I'm looking for cover and I don't see any cover except for this little like divot thing quite a ways away. And I range it and it's at like 53 yards to the gap. So I was like, geez, I'm in my like late season stuff, 53 yards on the ground. Like, this is not going to be easy. So I sit there and I sit there. And then right at dusk, this deer comes. Because like, it's either I'm going to fill my tag or I'm not on this hunt. So I'm going to shoot the first deer that walks through, whatever. So all pops this little buck. He was, I couldn't tell if it was like an older buck that had just like gone so far downhill. I try and tell myself that, but I think it was probably like a 2-year-old. But I saw him come out and he stopped right after that fence gap. And I'm like, I held it on and I had a lighted knock and I watched that knock just go up and drop right in and watch him like kick and go back over the fence and drop. And I'm like, holy smokes, I did it. Like the second to last day of the season, 53 yards on the ground, just triumphant. And I walk to this deer and then I realize it's dark and coyotes are howling all over the place. And I'm 2 miles away from my truck. I don't have a cart. I don't have nothing. I'm like, I didn't really expect to kill one. And I did. And now I had to figure out like how to get it out of there. And of course I'm all by myself too. So I took like, I didn't know if I was going to be in a tree or not. So I brought a harness. So like I had a rope in my tree harness. So I like hooked it up and I drug that sucker out for 2 miles. And I had never been so happy to see my truck. And it's just one of those memories that like, it definitely wasn't even close to the biggest deer I've ever shot, but it's one of my most memorable hunts ever. So, and it's just great. It's one of those things you can look back and just really appreciate and understand, like, this is why I love hunting. This is why I love the outdoors.
I think that was something you guys have on your page is about hunt for fun, not trophies. So,
yeah,
you know, exactly, making those memories. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, we have a lot of sayings that have emerged, like, it's your hunt, your hunt, it's your tag, your hunt. Like, it's sad that if you were to post that, you would have, like, your hunt would have been watered down or diluted a little bit because someone else would have eroded your happiness. Like, in some cases, it's better to not post. You don't even have to deal with it, so you can cherish that memory on your own terms. Like, but you should be able to post it and celebrate because that's what it's about. And most people, by and large, like, negativity sadly stands out. It's just louder. Right. And it's like 1%. It's just like the news. They report on 1% of bad. There's just nothing good. So most people are going to say good, positive things. You might get the one Yahoo in there, the keyboard cowboy, as we call them, that'll say something. But then it festers, and that one thing becomes the thorn in your side. You're like, man, it's a paper cut, but like, wow, it's tiny. Why does it hurt so bad? It's just a paper cut. It's not like my leg got blown off. You're like, geez, you know, you think you could deal with it, but you turn to, it's a painful thought to deal with that. And that's kind of what happened to me. I was like really proud that I got my first bow kill, and you know, there it was. I was like, well, that was silly that people are being ridiculous. So we try to. I'm not a big fan of bullying, so I guess we try to like use our community now to like again just drown out any sort of that negativity. But that hunt, dude, that's an OKS Hunter story for sure. Not expecting to get one that far out, you're like, oh, now I got to like figure out how to deal with this. Darn it! And then you're like, real quick, like how damn tough it is, and that's an impressionable memory. That's awesome.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And my legs hurt for like a week after that. I like, and you know what? Getting that thing into the back of my truck too after I'd got it there, that was also not easy.
I'm sure not.
Oh, but yes, rewarding. 100% rewarding for sure.
My first year bow hunting, I'm kind of like you. I was kind of an adult onset hunter. I didn't start till I was either last year of college or right after college. But my first year, I was pretty blessed. I was able to harvest a small 5x5, but I was like pumped, like beyond belief. Like that was a crazy first deer to get. And then I got a nice muley too for the first year as well. But the year after that, like I went out, I was like, oh, I'm gonna kill it. Like this is awesome. Like I love hunting. I'm so hooked now. But then like you follow a lot of those people on social media and you see all the grip and grands and like the big stuff and things like that. And then your expectations get super high. But like I wouldn't say I was disappointed, but like I just felt a ton of pressure. Like the second year I went out, I was like, if I don't shoot something big, like if I don't shoot a big deer, like what am I gonna do? Like I can't tell anybody. Like I just felt a ton of pressure to like get something nice. Otherwise, like something bad was gonna happen. Not that it was, but like that's just what I felt. So I almost like didn't hunt that year. I went out a couple times and was like, man, I'm not seeing much.
We did an episode with Mark Kenyon on his show about that very topic, about the pressure to, and he has it greater because he's of influence, you know, he's like, well, I don't do it. I'm like, gosh, what am I even doing? I'm supposed to be some sort of professional hunter here. And we have a shirt that says shoot deer. And it's kind of silly, like, ah, shoot deer, right? But the point of it is, somewhere along the way with the kid example again, I talk to kids at trade shows and they're like, and actually at the Iowa Deer Classic, and they're like, you know, I haven't even shot a deer because it's not, I pass on every deer I can because I'm only going to shoot a 150 or bigger because that's the only deer that matters. And I'm like, well, that's like going to the gym and expecting you're going to bench press 250 pounds on day one when you're 150 soaking wet. Like, you got to put some reps in. You got to build that muscle. You should probably shoot some does to practice good conservation. Mm-hmm. Know what it's like to be a full draw on a deer. Old does are smart. Good luck killing one of those things.
Amen like, to that.
let some arrows fly. Like, get some experience. Because I tell you what, if you haven't shot anything and that 150 shows up, you're probably going to mess it up. You're going to maim that animal or something because you have zero experience. You need to go shoot deer to get comfortable. I had a moment last season that tested me as the co-founder of this brand. I was like, oh my God, I'm feeling the same thing you just talked about. And I'm like, I'm supposed to be the exemplar here. And so bow season was phenomenal. Like I put myself in front of 150-inch deer on public land with it, you know, taking a canoe out. Like it was all the most like, you know, hardcore stuff you would think of as a public land hunter. And it was just super exciting. I was like, oh my God. And people say those old deer are smart. Well, they're right. That thing was ridiculously smart. I actually couldn't believe it. I was like, who taught this deer to look up? Why is he looking at me through a bush? How did he see? This is ridiculous. I had another deer that same hunt, a smaller, like a 2-year-old or 3-year-old 8-point that I let an arrow rip on. And I just missed. I went over his back. I don't know what happened. And then I just kept hunting and a bigger one showed up. So I was like, that was probably one of the most exciting hunts ever. And I didn't seal the deal. And I went back and tried to chase that bigger guy. And I got close again and I missed it. I whiffed again. I didn't get to draw back on him. So two times I saw him, I couldn't draw back. But I'm like, wow, that tells me like I'm actually learning here. I got two attempts on a big mature buck. Like that's hard to do in public.
Yeah.
So then fast forward to gun season, our Wisconsin gun deer opener, which is basically a holiday. And I'm like, well, I haven't shot a deer with my gun in, I think, 2 years. I just hadn't had a lot of great opportunity to shoot anything. It just didn't really present itself. And so this last year, literally the first year I saw, I got a glimpse of it. It was a buck. He had a doe trailing him, or like they must have come together. She was just behind. I didn't see her at first. So I already was like, I'm going to shoot this buck. And I knew he wasn't huge, but I was like, I'm bringing meat home. I have a 6-year-old daughter, a 4-year-old boy, another 4-year-old boy, and my 4-year-old and 6-year-old, especially my daughter, she's like, Dad, are you going to get a deer? I want some venison. She's just hounding me about it. She like won't let it go. And so then I'm like, you know, thinking I got to bring some meat home. So I shoot this thing. It's above me here. You can't see it. It's out of camera, but it's a basket rat 8. It's a very small 8. It's like a yearling 8. Probably would have been a great deer if I let it pass, but it's public land and there's not a lot of options. So got it. And I almost didn't shoot it. And then when I did, I was like, maybe I shouldn't like similar thing, like this weird inner dialogue about what are people going to think? And I was like, who cares what people think? I FaceTime my kids. They were cheering and chanting, deer, deer, deer. They were so jacked. I'm picking up the rest of the meat like later this week, I think, from the processor. And that was like what was important. Not the other stuff. I post anyways because I was like, I need to post this to show that you can post it. And like, it was a cherished memory. Like, it was a big deal. And for me, though, the woods where I shot it, it's a special place for me. I've been going to that same spot for 10 years. And it means a lot to me to hunt there. And I was like, this hunt is more about the camaraderie of being with my dad and my friends that come in from other states that I don't get to see. I only see these guys like once a year. And so, like, you darn right I want to hang a buck on the meat pole. Like, let's go, you know?
Yeah. It's just so weird that there's expectations on that stuff. Like, why does there have to be an expectation? Then that, like, in, I think it was probably 2021 season, is that was the season where I just felt a ton of pressure to do something. And I think that's when I had seen a couple of your guys' posts and stuff like that. And I was like, ah, that's pretty cool. And I did end up harvesting something that year. I don't even remember what it was, but like after I kind of went through that process myself, I was like, why do I need to impress anybody with what I'm doing? Like, why can't it just be something that I like to do? Like, why is there expectations around it?
You know? Mm-hmm.
Eric, have you seen a lot of like women experiencing that same pressure or not so much?
I think so. What's really interesting that you mentioned that is I'm a big follower of like Stoic philosophy, Stoicism. I follow the likes of Marcus Aurelius and read Meditations a couple times a year. And I tripped in this author, Ryan Holiday, who is like a modern day Stoic. He writes a lot about how to like apply to life these days. And he wrote a book called Ego is the Enemy. I think I've read that book 8 or 9 times over the last 3 years. And it's something to work at all the time. I can't just sweep my kitchen floor and like call it good. I'd have to sweep it again tomorrow and probably the same day because my kids are going to like, you know, ruin it. You have to work on it all the time. It's never done. Your work is never done. And so I've written a couple pieces for other publications, including our own, about like, is there too much ego in hunting and so forth. And putting that kind of stuff out, I did a post on social, I don't know, not that long ago, about like social media is not hunting. Like it is not, it's what you see there is not reality, and you don't need to be concerned about it to some sort of like degree that we just talked about. And for some reason, I struck a chord with women on like some large scale to like, the tune of some of the gals that are like major influential hunters in the hunting space. I'm not talking about the huntresses, the ones that like get the bad, give everyone else a bad rap. I'm talking about like girls with good heads on their shoulders. We're like reposting and commenting and sending DMs like, thank you, this is what we need. And I almost wonder if like the male component of hunting has so much bravado and masculinity that it like, it just automatically fosters some of that ego. Everyone has an ego. There's a spectrum. Everyone has one, but some have like real big ones and some, you know, have mediocre ones, and that's all good. And everyone has a place in this world. But I think that's attracted a number of females to our brand. And I think it's harder for them to find space in this category because of the men that are in it. You know, it's got to be a quite different challenge. We've had a lot of females on our podcast, and I try not to be like, so what's it like being a female hunter? Like, I don't. How about you're just a hunter, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Like, it doesn't, the only thing different is like, you can't just pull the truck over and pee without, you know.
Yeah, I was talking about that earlier. The weird things in the woods. I'm like, going to the bathroom, guys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking about weird things in the woods. So you obviously have your own podcast network. You just put out an episode recently. Oh, what was it like? Scariest things in the, what was it?
Something like that. What was the title of that one again?
So a year ago we did
because this was the second rendition, right?
Like zoo cryptozoology episode, and it did really well. Like, and not just in the sense of like vanity metrics. I mean, like people responded to it. Like it was, we had people coming up to us at trade shows being like, I love that Sasquatch episode, and they would share their stories with us. I was like, we should just do that once a year. It's fun. Like it's off season. Who cares? We can talk about that kind of stuff. So we did another one. I didn't do as well from a caller standpoint. Like people still called in, but I didn't, no one called in with some like completely ridiculous story that I was hoping we would dig up from the masses. There's still good stories, but I was like, come on guys, let's go. Like someone's seen a ghost or something's happened. Right. So yeah, that was a fun episode, but it was like hunters find weird things in the woods. And I think someone had messaged in and they're like, do you want me to send you a picture of this, you know, SEX doll I found in the woods? I was like, no, don't send me that picture. I do not want to see that. And then like, yeah, weird people find weird stuff in the woods. We talked about like all the balloons. That's not that weird, but it has a different meaning about like maybe how the winds are behaving on that piece of property. And usually that's then combined with a lot of big buck sign. I'm like, oh, I never knew that.
The balloons are a weird thing.
Yeah. That's a little sketchy.
I'm not a victim. What's the right word? A finder of some balloons in the wild. And it's just random. You find them in the most random places. But like you said, kind of the wind pattern sometimes, but it just makes you think a little bit.
Yeah. All I can envision right now is that like red balloon with that clown. And I
hate that
scary movie.
You got a clown on the thumbnail, right?
Was that it? Oh, God.
Yeah, I did. I was like, I don't have any good photos. I just went to stock and I found some. I typed in creepy woods. And that's, like, this is it. This is the one.
That's wicked creepy, dude.
Yeah, I've got a story. It's not finding something in the woods, but it's something scary. And it's probably not scary to most people, but I went on my first big Western hunt. Last year I went to Utah. I had an elk tag in my pocket. Unsuccessful hunt, but it was a good time. But on probably like day 2-ish, I was walking back to camp. We had just climbed up the mountain, kind of did a spike camp situation. And I was probably mile and a half away from camp, not super far, but it was dark, and I was like, I'm going to kind of huff it a little bit. I haven't been here before. I don't really know my way back, but I've got Onyx. I'll figure it out. But there was some noises and just like some grunts, like, ruh, ruh, like that type of thing. And I was like, I'm from South Dakota. Like, I sit in the whitetail woods. There is nothing that makes that sound around here.
There are stories that got shared last week on that episode. And it was like, I felt it brush up against my head in the tent. No. And I immediately went into the middle of my sleeping bag. I was like, like a little kid crawling under his covers. Like, that's going to help you, you know, against an 800-pound bear.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I've got a bear story, too.
Needless to say, I walked the rest of that walk at a brisk pace with my hand on the Glock. that's the end of that.
I believe it. I was hunting Colorado for elk. It was the second time I'd been out, and we were like maybe 3 miles back in this draw, and I didn't end up seeing any elk, but I saw a couple of cubs come down out of the woods, and then I saw the mama come. And then by the end of the hunt, I thought they had gone away, but I was walking back, and I had a buddy that was like maybe 2/3 of a mile or so farther up the draw, closer to the vehicle. And I heard all this crashing behind me. And I was like, oh God, those bears are following me. Like, I'm in their turf. So you could hear them like growling and breaking stuff. And I just was like, well, I didn't have a sidearm or nothing. I had some pepper spray. That's about it. Like, if they're going to get me, they're going to get me, whatever. I'm just going to try and keep my cool and get out of here. But I get to my buddy and I was like, okay, do you see anything? No, quiet night. Okay. Well, so don't freak out, but I have three bears following me right now. They have been for the past 2/3 of a mile. I don't think they're going to attack because they haven't yet, but we need to just get out of their turf. So, and like his eyes lit up like saucers, man. It was like, you're kidding me, right? And then all of a sudden you heard twigs snapping and he's like, oh yeah, you're serious. All right. Let's get out of here.
Your delivery would be the scary part. Cause at that point, you know, you're operating on a level of adrenaline that like you don't usually get unless you're operating that calmly.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's already made peace. He's like, he's on another level. We got to go.
Yeah. We're not on the same acceptance level of the situation that's going on right now. Oh, good stuff.
I kind of want to go back and touch on something you said about that. I think it was your rifle deer. You said that the spot that you went to was kind of sentimental, like something you'd done with father or friends in the past, that type of thing.
Yep.
It kind of plays into, I think, what you guys stand for a little bit. But, like, it's something I've come to find over the last couple of years is bow hunting's kind of a solo mission, right? And a lot of the times you're by yourself. But the opportunity to hunt with people, even if it's at, like, some sort of, like, a camp or something like that, or, like, the deer lodge or something like that, but hunting with other people is something like super special because almost everybody has a story of their first time hunting with somebody, like with their dad or with their grandpa or something like that. And I think a lot of that gets breezed over too in social media, like the opportunities that are presented when you get to hunt with other people or just loved ones, friends, family, that type of thing, that gets breezed over a lot. And I think that's something super important to the hunting industry and community in general, is like the camaraderie of it too.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts. I mean, I was a gun hunter before I was a bow hunter, so I appreciate that quite a bit. And it does get brushed on the rug as like, it's a boomstick, it's easy, there's no challenge. It's like, well, yeah, to a degree, sure, it's a lot easier. Damn right, it's easier than a bow. Like, I love putting the smackdown on whitetail when I've had a hard bow season. It's like the scene from Billy Madison. He's like, now you're all in big trouble. He starts just beating on these kids with this ball. Like, that's how I feel. But the I have to remind myself, like, I could go on a solo hunt with my gun and get all tactical and, like, figure out where these deer, but I'm like, forget that. I'm here for my buddies. Like, the hunt's going to happen, and I'm going to take whatever's going to come to me. I'm not going to go chasing it. The woods are peppered full of blaze orange. Like, there's hunters everywhere, so that's not going to play out the same as a solo bow hunt. So it's a reminder to myself, at least, to, like, focus on what's important and cherish that. Like, I did a pretty good job this last year, even, like, put my phone away and just – we went to the card table, we played cards all night. Like, there's no, everyone I need to be caring about is right here. I mean, my wife's back home with the kids. That won't always be the case. But like, I'm here for these people and for this experience. Like, I'm going to enjoy it. And there's no sense in just sitting on a couch on my phone the whole damn time. Like, I'm here to, let's cook, let's tell stories, let's have a couple cold ones, and let's play cards and do whatever traditional things you do at deer camp.
Yeah.
And it's just a terrible tradition at deer camp. We, I don't know why we'd like to torture ourselves. It's just kind of silly, but we started drinking Malort if you didn't fill a tag on the first day. No, that's a bad idea. More
but those traditions are like what's fun, though. I mean, that's almost just as good as the hunt itself.
Yeah. It's like we get back and like, you're ready to like down in the dumps and get a deer. And you're like, no, I'm going to take the stupid Malort shot. Like, whose idea was this? I was like, you guys, we don't have to do it. No, no, I'll do it. I'm like, oh,
no,
okay.
It's tradition.
Yeah. So, no, the camaraderie part's really important. And, you know, I'm excited to bring my kids to deer camp. Deer camp will change over time as my kids age up, my dad gets older and so forth. Like, it'll evolve. And maybe some of the same folks aren't coming. And I think that's why it's important to cherish it, because as lives change over time, like, what we have right now won't be what we have. Life is a film reel, not a snapshot. Like, it's going to change. So, like, it's important to hold on to those things in the moment and be – so philosophy talks a lot about just being present in the moment, and that's an important thing to do. I think that's what hunting brings to the table for us as human beings more than anything. It's like it's an ability to be present in a way that you can't get from anything else. I don't know anything else. I mean, you can be in nature and go hiking and sit on a bench, but, like, drawing back on a bow freezes time when you're a deer is in sight or a turkey or whatever you're hunting. That there's no presence like being at full draw or like popping the safety off on an animal in the sights. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Oh, 100%.
Sometimes it freezes time for a long time.
Especially if you have to hold that full draw for a while.
Yeah, you don't know what freezing time's like until you're full draw. Yeah. You just start to shake from blood fever and muscle tension. Yeah.
That is the slowest time we'll ever move in your entire life. Is when you're full
and then
draw.
When you play back, it's too quick. You're like, wait, I thought I was in slow
that
motion.
That had
like,
been 5 minutes.
Why did I black out?
You tell that story. I was at full draw for at least a minute. And then, like, it's you like have it on video. Seconds. It's like 7 seconds.
It feels that way too, because they won't take that step from behind the tree or whatever, you know, whatever's happening. It's like, yeah, it's crazy, but I love it. It's like that's some of the fun.
Yeah, it's just every time out in the woods, it's a new experience. I mean, that's what kind of gets you coming back for more.
Well, I might have to get into it.
Yes, exactly. So I figure if we talk enough, we'll finally like spark that moment to really get you out there. So
yeah, would you have any advice for those who are adults just getting into it or have an interest?
Yeah, I think it's changed a bit now. Like, there's programs and online courses and a lot of like hunting commons around where you can like insert yourself into groups that have mentorship built in. And so one of the first things I would say is, do you know someone that hunts that could mentor you? Because the best way to learn is by like going out and doing it with someone that has that experience. So even if you get a guide, hunting can feel really intimidating. We consider weapons like bows and guns. If you don't have that exposure, come from the inner city or something, is potentially like building out a bow is a process. You got to get sights, you got to get arrow builds, you got to figure out your FOC potentially. Like, you can go down rabbit holes. Crossbow is probably a good starter pack if you were to like get into it. There's less to mechanically do with a crossbow. They're more like ready out of the box. But that's a whole other conversation that people get weird about. I think it's fine. Rifle hunting is an easy entry point, you know. Beyond that, like buying gear and camo and all that stuff, I mean, Facebook Marketplace all day. Start with the stuff that they're like, you go buy a bow that's already all built out for a fraction of the cost of anything new on the shelf. Go get some camo, like get something that's affordable first. Start with the things that you can afford, or get hand-me-downs before you go make a bigger investment, because you might not like it. So do that first to test the water, see what you think, go with someone, go on a hunt, and don't hunt at all. Just go with another hunter and be like, hey, can I just tag along and like be with you on this thing to see what it's like, and just pretend like you're in their shoes to some degree. And if you decide you like it, which most people would have a hard time not liking it after that, then you can, you know, bust out the wallet and dig in your pocket and walk into Shields and start to be like, all right, what am I going to get? You know,
then the real fun begins.
Then it gets exciting. Then you're on a journey for the rest of your life. You know, everyone's got a hobby they dump money into. It's something for everybody. It could be cars. It could be model freaking trains. I don't know. Everyone's got a thing. The people model trains might be pretty weird, but nonetheless.
The okayest model trainer.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't know why that's what served up in my brain. Yeah. Like, what am I going with this here? But here we are.
You're like thinking, what would Ashley be into? Model trains, maybe. Yeah.
Guys, I really love Norfolk Southern. Like, let me tell you.
Yeah, I was just sitting back here genuinely curious where that was going to go. I was like, all right, I'm just along for the ride on this one.
But I think you starting with the very basics, like spend as little bit of money, get exposure. It's much like starting a business. You start with something called a minimum viable product, an MVP. You can do a lot of work before you have to go spend a bunch of money to figure if it's going to work or not. Like, you could put something out there and get feedback. You can put yourself in the woods and get yourself some feedback about how you felt about it and then go from there. But a lot of people, like, we're bringing on a couple new podcasts this quarter. And one of the new ones, like, a lot of these folks are adult onset hunters. Like, they got into it late. I think COVID really brought a lot of people into the outdoors, mm-hmm. and a number of them dropped off, but a few stuck on for a good reason. So I'm happy to have some new hunters among our ranks, and hunters today don't look like hunters from in the past. And I don't think that's bad. I think that's totally great. I mean, you could talk about R3 and how we need to recruit, reactivate, and retain. And there's arguments against, like, well, there's an access problem too. And there's all sorts of problems, but the one that we're focused on is, like, how we treat one another. Because if there is a battle to fight outside, whether it's access lobbying for that in Washington, or if it's, you know, dealing with people at the polls or whatever it is, like the non-hunters, like, we need to have our house in order first and come to a fight prepared as a like cohesive unit. If we're fighting amongst ourselves, like, the war is already over. Like, mm-hmm. we're going to lose.
Right.
Yeah. Because even in the industry, I mean, you have people that are button heads against each other, like you said, compound bow versus crossbow people. I mean, why does it have to be that way? I mean, we're all doing the same thing. We're all here for the same reasons. Yeah, gotta have our house in order first.
Yep. Yeah, and it's good to have the discussions, though. It's good to talk about, you know, crossbows are arguably far more lethal than anything else, short of a rifle. And so, like, if someone's getting into it, that probably would be a really good starting point, because they're gonna have an ethical shot, and you can't argue against ethics and morality. If the morality of that weapon provides the most ethical kill, how are you going to get down on that person? Where that gets fuzzy then is when they start thinking they could take shots at 150 yards. Just because it can doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. Like, the goal should still be to deploy some woodsmanship, bring the animal in as close as you can, or get to as close as you can to it, to make sure you're taking shots within a reasonable range. That's where I think the argument gets a little out of control. But if we have the dialogue, we can control that narrative better. And we can talk about it, so we can, like, take down the walls of the people that are, like, the naysayers. The easiest way to get someone on their defense is to disagree with their disposition out of the gate. You need to hear what they have to say and then respond accordingly. And we try to be an exemplar on social media. You'll never see us in a firefight with someone going toe-to-toe. We'll always take the high road. We'll always try to be the better person. The best way to get back at someone that's not great, or, you know, for lack of better terms, being an a-hole, is to just be a better person than them. And I don't mean be a better person, like, in a pompous way, like our nose is to the sky. I mean, like, just try to do better than that person and put your best foot forward. That's the antidote here. And I think as hunters, we're an arguable bunch. We're a disagreeable bunch. Like, we're very visceral. Hunting is rooted in deep passion over generations. My grandpa did it this way, so that's the only way. Well, yeah, but his grandpa did it that way, and he thinks that's the only way. Like, those aren't the only ways. There's lots of ways. You know, we have a shared interest here and a shared connection that's a human experience across generations. If I talk to a caveman, if that was ever something that was possible in a theoretical universe, we would probably share some great stories, but he wouldn't have a clue what camouflage is. He wouldn't have a clue what a broadhead is, or an expandable. He wouldn't be able to cross, but he'd be like, man, I took that buffalo down and it was freaking crazy. I'd be like, yeah, that's insane. You're crazy, man. Like, when I took down this whitetail with a bow, he's like, wow, I can't believe you shot it from that far. That's incredible. Like, we would share stories and there would be no arguing. It would be, again, it's the essence of what we're talking about, the methodology, subject to interpretation, I suppose, and people's opinions. But I am clearly on a rant and you guys can stop me at any point in time.
No worries.
Great, yeah. Hunting, great life advice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Kindness goes a long way in an argument.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I do have a burning question for you. So if you happen to go out and you end up shooting like a state record buck, like a 230-inch double drop tine record book buck, are you obligated to like change your name from OKS Hunter then, or are you going to keep it?
We had that question when I shot the 23-inch wide buck by me here. You guys, and then my buddy Derek, who does the podcast with us, shot 170-inch deer. And they're like, you guys got to change your name. I'm like, yeah. You don't understand the okayness that went into that hunt and how bad it got messed up. Let me tell you, like, I cut my finger open on my broadhead, broke my bow, and slung an arrow at a 6-point the week beforehand that I would have been just as happy to take, clearly, because I was trying to take it. And then I end up with this other brute here. And then I end up crossing a river in my underwear because I don't get my pants wet. And my dad crossed the same river in his underwear. So you got two generations of Clarks, one in his tighty whities, one in his boxers, standing over here.
Wild hogs like out there.
Full of, yeah, it was, you know, very memorable. No, I could just see the headlines. OKS Hunter takes record buck. Like, that'd be pretty neat. But, you know, certainly can't change. I'm sure there would be a lot of shenanigans that went into a hunt of that caliber. I probably would have pooped myself or something, you know?
Yeah. Would you have any reservations posting it if it's that big?
No, I would just frame the angle appropriately. Like, we're not doing this for vanity. We're not doing it for social media. And that's where it could get confusing. Like, there's going to be a level of pride that would go into something like that. I hope to get bigger deer. Like, what I realized with our logo is people assume we're automatically promoting go kill all the spikes and don't practice QDMA. Well, there's QDMA, but there's also healthy deer management, which takes into consideration the entire herd. So here in Wisconsin, we have a huge problem with CWD. There's a healthy herd problem that we have to worry about in addition to QDMA. So like the small bucks are the ones, think about young dudes at a bar that are 21. What are they doing? Chasing women. You know, there's a whole thing happening there. The younger bucks are the ones out chasing the does, spreading CWD, not the mature ones. They're waiting their turn to breed because they know the does will come to them and they'll figure it out really easily. They're dominant. They can wait it out. The young ones are out there spreading their, you know what, like crazy. So to that end, like, I forgot the question. I don't know where the hell I was going with that. I think our brand, people get confused. They think we're promoting spikes. We're promoting memories, and the small antler is meant to signify that there's more to the hunt than the size of the inches. It's about bigger things. So, I don't remember the question, but somewhere along those lines, maybe is an answer. I don't remember.
Well, yeah. We'll peel it apart, and there's an answer in there.
There definitely was. It was about, just not shooting all the deer.
It's not about only posting the small ones. It's just about having as much pride in the small ones as it is the big ones.
I think that's what it is. Like, framing the angle to be about what is important, mm-hmm. which right. is the memory and the challenge or what have you. And I just always have to try to like say that it's not just about spikes. Or it is really. It's your tag. It's your hunt. It's not my position to tell you how to punch your own tag. So if you are a man of ambition and goals and you're really trying to chase that challenge. Again, going back to the stages of the hunt, like there's the shooting stage, the limiting out stage, trophy stage, method stage, and sportsman stage. I have an uncle that's like pushing 80, and he goes out with this DSLR camo more than anything else these days. He's got a wall trophy room full of like bigger bucks than most celebrities, and he's an excellent hunter and excellent woodsman, and he's at a sportsman's stage where he's like, I just want to be out in nature, and if I see something that I want to shoot, I'll shoot it. But more or less, he's like, I'm just trying to get that experience where I'm seeing these animals in their environment versus like the shooting out stage. Usually, you're 12 years old. You just finally got to start getting into hunting. You're going to shoot any damn thing that walks by because you're excited to shoot it. That could be happening as a 30-some-year-old that just got into it, too. Like, those stages exist at different ages, and they're not in – it's not like you have to take – you know, deer hunting 101 and 102, they're not like you have prerequisites. You could be at any stage. Like I mentioned, the kids that are holding out for a 150, like they can continue to do that. That's okay if they're that goal oriented. I just always like to say, like, to each his own, you know, for lack of a better term, just don't worry about what other people are doing. Like, it's not their hunt, it's yours. It's not their tag. Like, they didn't buy your tag, you did. They shouldn't have a say in how you use it.
That's my favorite sticker that you guys sell, is that it's the tag one. However, the saying goes. Yeah, that's my favorite one.
It's a good one. The don't forget your release is the popular one.
Yeah.
Yeah, been there.
Yeah, it's a good reminder.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. It's very relatable then.
Yeah. To a lot of people. If you've bow hunted, you've probably forgotten your release a number of times.
Yeah.
You said the word method. That leads me to latitude. I am a new adopter of saddle hunting in the last couple of years, and it is a game changer. And that's the evolution of your first couple times out, getting just kind of the base minimal gear and maybe a tree stand at some point, and then you can move into the saddle realm, and that's a whole different ball game. But talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on that stuff. I've got the method too, and the carbon sticks and the platform, and it is just a game changer.
I have all of that as well. I have the Method 2, the Carbon 6, and I have the X-Wing platform. Yeah. And I've hunted out of the Lone Wolf platform. I've hunted out of old tree stands that were hand-me-down from my dad. I've hunted out of the Lone Wolf, the former Lone Wolf tree stands, the alpha. I think it's important to have the right tool for the job. Mm-hmm. Not saddle's not gonna be the best fit for every tree or every scenario, versus a tree stand might not be the best fit for every tree and every scenario. So I think it's important to have, you know, the right tool for the job, having different things you can go to based on how you're trying to set up. And as a mobile hunter, I hated being clunky. I'm already clunky enough. Like, you guys understand, this is not a facade. I really am the OKS hunter in the sense that, like, I, the camera guys we brought around with us for our YouTube show that we put out, like, it's like The Office but deer hunting, they have been like, wow, you're not acting. This is real. I was like, yeah, dude. I'm so sorry you're following me.
Not scripted.
No, not at all. And I'm like, just run it, man. I'll, you know, whatever. But I hated being clunky, feeling like a big giant snapping turtle, you know, walking through the woods like Bowser, hitting every tree branch and stuff. So I really fell in love with Latitude because when I was a kid, I like loved the movie Three Ninjas and all those types of movies. And I was like, I just want to feel like a ninja out there. I just want to feel like nimble. And gun hunting, I wore these Mickey Mouse World War II boots. I had, you know, freaking two layers of long johns on and a big giant orange onesie. I felt like the Michelin Man. I couldn't put my arms on like a kid from A Christmas Story. And I just felt like, God, this is an injury waiting to happen. I'm going to fall out of the tree because I can't bend my arm. And so bow hunting, I was like, oh my gosh, it's not so cold out. I can be nimble. I don't have 20 layers on. This is really cool. Well, enter saddle hunting. I wear the thing out in the woods. Latitudes is nice because it doesn't, you can unclip the leg straps or what have you. So you don't have that like rubbing and chafing on you as you're walking out and restricting your movement. Mm-hmm. And it's all magnets. I'm looking at it, it's hanging up in the studio. It's all magnets. So there's no Velcro. There's no metal. Nothing's going to make any sound. With a tree stand, something's always clinking or clanking onto a branch or getting stuck. The platform fits inside my backpack. The sticks go on the outside of the backpack and strap down. Like, I literally can just go in the woods with a backpack and I'm set. I have everything I need right there. So it just created this minimal, like, it truly is mobile in the sense that, like, I tore down and set up twice in the same hunt to make a move where I saw bucks entering and exiting this area. It's like, okay, well, I'm clearly too far off the mark. Two is enough to indicate that there's probably a pattern happening that I'm not a part of. I need to get in closer. That's one of the hunter I saw, the big guy that I missed as the second time. So I love their stuff. I think, and they've become a really, like, I'm a marketer by trade. And I believe what Gary Vaynerchuk had said about, like, every business should act like a media company. And there, in my opinion, there's two brands doing a good job. Exodus Trail Chem has done a good job with, like, Whitetail Cribs and so forth. And Latitude has done just as good, if not a better job, of becoming a media company. Like, they have more views on their own show than most hunting shows have on that all they do. It's like, these guys are a product company, and their YouTube is bigger than some media companies. Like, they are firing on all cylinders. I know those guys well. I love their product, their innovation, their work ethic. They do a great job. So it's a huge plug for them.
Yeah.
Hopefully you carry their products.
Oh yeah, we sure do. We have an exclusive saddle with them.
That's amazing. That's good. And they've done a good job going to retail and working with brands like Shields. Shields is my favorite retailer. Like, there's nobody else that comes close to you guys. It's not even close at all. And every brand I talk to, they say, you guys are such a joy to work with, you know, on the retail side. So the customer experience, the ESOP, like the brands you carry, like, kudos to you guys for being a great positive influence in the hunting community.
Hey, we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It means a lot. It does.
So yeah, Latitude's great. I love this. Saddle hunting in specific, it's just good to have more tools in your arsenal to go to the woods with and be prepared for what you want to do.
Just the amount of different trees it lets you get into. Like, sometimes you just can't get in certain trees with hang-on stands or ladder stands and stuff like that. You can just get into some wacky situations with a saddle that puts you in good spots for success too.
It is true. You got to practice though. Like, if you're not practicing with it, you're going to miss shots. The way you anchor and the way you, like, stabilize yourself against a tree with your knee and things of that nature, there is a level of, like, there's a learning curve there you're going to have to practice. Absolutely. To get at. I personally am not a fan of hunting out of a saddle with my rifle. I tried it. I couldn't feel stable enough. I actually didn't take a shot one of those years I mentioned, and that was why, because I didn't feel stable enough to take the shot. I found some hacks that would be good if you brought, like, a camera arm with you. Mm-hmm. Like, you could rest your your barrel on the camera arm, and I was like, oh, that's a good idea. Well, I didn't think of that, so now I know, and maybe I'll try that.
Next year.
Hey, you live and you learn. And yeah, I'll vouch for that practicing before you actually go out hunting in at 100%. I remember first time I got into a saddle, I wanted to check it out. And, you know, I was just in the yard and, you know, went up the tree and put a block out there. And I was like a foot different than where I thought I was going to be. I was like, oh, I'm glad I took that shot in the yard before I just went and started hunting.
Yeah, it's a different animal. So, and you got to just be comfortable with your, I mean, in the military, they train you to be confident with your equipment. They throw you in the gas chamber, take your mask off, and you breathe in terrible tear gas. It's because they want you to trust your equipment. They want you to feel confident that when battle comes, you're prepared. Like, practicing and trying out your equipment is a way to make sure that it's safe, usable, and that you're comfortable and confident with it. So when the time comes, you can take the moves that you need to make. Last year, spent a lot of time practicing in the yard, turning myself fully around and standing my platform. If you take your bridge, just so you can lean forward.
Yep.
And like, I was like, wow, this changes everything. Cause normally you're facing the tree and it felt really awkward. And actually it scared me to death because I leaned in such a way that I grabbed my crucifix knot and it started sliding forward. I thought I was going to fall out of the tree.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I caught it, freaked me out. My stomach dropped and I was like, oh God. But now I'm like, if I'm ever going to do that again, I need to be mindful where that knot is.
For sure. Only comes with practice.
Yep. All right. Well, great conversation there. So we appreciate your time. And, you know, for those that want to follow along, learn more about the OKS lifestyle, can you talk to us about, you know, how people can follow along, whether it's your podcast network or Instagram and YouTube, whatnot?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking. I appreciate the plug, selfishly. It's okayesthunter.com will be the hub of where you would need to go to access all of that. We have a YouTube presence. The podcast lives there. We have a show on YouTube that I mentioned. It's like the Office, but deer hunting. So it's more of like a mockumentary, less aspirational, more like relatable. And then our podcast network is growing. We'll have 10 shows on our network by the end of this quarter. So we're taking our similar tone, voice, brand ethos, and just putting into different verticals. So we have like a Western hunt, a trapping podcast, a fishing podcast, an upland podcast, female voice podcast out of Virginia called The Onset. So we have something hopefully for everybody. So if you get sick of my voice or the OKS Hunter podcast isn't the one for you, like check out some of our other ones. We have some good hosts that are doing a really good job of putting out relatable content that has a lot of humility and self-deprecation in it. So yeah, follow along on our social channels. We're everywhere you can get social, or even on LinkedIn. So like if you're bored at work and you have permission to browse that platform, you can still get your fix.
There you go. Awesome. Perfect. All right. Awesome. Well, hey, we greatly appreciate the time and you keep being okay. All right.
Yeah, you guys too. Thank you so much.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yeah. Likewise, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Shields Outdoors Podcast. Stay tuned for future segments and visit our social media pages, Shields Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram, for daily updates.